All right, welcome to our Monday Roughing the Passer podcast, playoff edition, firing edition, Black Monday. We got it all in one. I'm Pete Prisco, Brady Quinn, Pat Kerwin.
Yeah.
Great time of the year for football, but bad time for a lot of coaches.
It's brutal, but it comes with the territory, and a lot of guys knew weeks ago that their fate was probably already dot cast and they're going to be gone. So Pete Carroll once said to me, really the NFL is a world of coordinators that occasionally you're a head coach. And that's, there's a lot of truth to that. And GMs go back. I just talked to one now that has been fired twice as a GM, and he's back being a college scout in the Southeast, and he's at peace with himself about it. So when the younger you are, the more you fight it. The older you get, the more you realize it's part of the job. And I think the same thing happens with players. They're in their 30s. They look in the mirror. They know they're not going to be here very long. But it does lead me to the 39-year-old who came off the bench yesterday. Awesome.
You know, it's funny you say that, Pat, because I always feel like everyone talks about it being Black Monday for coaches. It's a lot of, there's a lot of players who feel that as well because the coach, the guy that either brought them in or drafted them is no longer there. They have to start over all again. And you don't know if the guy they bring in is going to keep you around or not. And actually, there's a great likelihood that they won't. I mean, I sat there and did a game this weekend with the Detroit Lions and Matt Forte, the Chicago Bears with Matt Forte and Calvin Johnson, who has a big cap number next year, is rumored to be a guy who they're going to release and let go into, you know, free agent market. Matt Forte has been there for 8 years now, 9 years, whatever it's been. And he's another guy who's going to probably be moving on. And, both guys who had great games. And I was sitting there watching just going, how are you letting these guys go? And now neither of those teams are necessarily having coaching changes. Maybe not at this point. You know, Jim Caldwell, I think, is safe, but you know, you're looking at saying like that's just on teams with coaches are staying. But a lot of changes, and it's a crazy time for players as they try to figure it out, you know, where they're possibly going to be. Cause usually whenever there's a coach being fired, there's a strong likelihood they're not coming back either.
Let's go through the firings. Let's go through some of these firings. Cleveland, Mike Pettine gone. Should it have happened? Was it the right decision? And you guys, I know, Brady, you hate the job. I mean, you think it's a terrible job.
Well, first off, you're putting me in a corner. I don't think it's a terrible job.
Oh, I always put you in a corner.
I think, the unfortunate thing right now is the way Jimmy Haslam's handled his ownership of the team. Three head coaches since he took over majority ownership in 2012 when he bought the team for $1 billion. Three GMs he's fired as well. I want to say the number I saw was 61 assistant coaches. He owed, let's go back to 2014, January 2014, last year. He owed $50 million to coaches who he was not, and executives who he was not, or were not coaching, or didn't have anything to do with the Browns. $50 million he was still paying out. I assume that number is going to be the same. So clearly with this much turnover in coaching staff and philosophy in the building, all that, there's going to be turnover in the roster. And my issue with firing Mike Pettine was they're never building anything. You know, it took them, everyone says, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Well, guess what? It took them a million days to build Rome, over a million days. And that's what I feel like is happening in Cleveland because they never have any cornerstone they can build on and go from there. I mean, when you hear the words of a guy like Joe Thomas, who's been there now for 9 years, has been through it, seen it all, and he's finally said he's tired of it. He's tired of all this. Then I think, you know, it's time that we need to get an owner in there who at least can hire someone who knows how to make the right decisions. And they're already putting Sashi Brown, who, Pete, I know you know, who he's a great in analytics, very smart guy, but what does he know about running a team?
I mean, that's a surprising one for me. But so you would have kept Pettine.
I would have kept Pettine. I probably would have gotten rid of Farmer.
Pat?
I would have kept Pettine. Look, he didn't draft Manziel. He was trying to raise the kid right, and no one's going to do that. And now they'll all say it's time for him to go. Putting Brown in charge is a joke to me. A joke. Letting him run the search for a head coach, a bigger joke. There is nothing attractive about that job except that there's only 32 of them in the world and someone will be excited to get it. He'll say all the right things and he'll be fired in 3 years. You don't let analytics guys run football teams. Period.
Well, is he not going to bring in a football decision maker? And so
he's
maybe
he's going to bring one, Pete, that's going to have to work for him.
Yeah, but he can't. Look, I know Sashi Brown. I've known him. He worked in Jacksonville. I know who he is. I talked to him before. I've actually exchanged texts with him before. I don't see him as a football guy. He didn't come up through the hard scrabble ways of going on the road and finding players and, you know, overturning rock. That's the problem. There's a lot of guys like that, Pat. If I'm not mistaken, isn't there a guy in Seattle that they're propping up to, what's his name? Kirchner? Isn't, what's Trent's name? Is it?
They prop up a guy every 2 years and get
But is right he, am I wrong? Did he not work in the office only and never has gone out in the field and scouted?
Let's just use the Steelers. And if you're not doing it the Steelers way, you're doing it wrong. They even make their kids, the Rooney kids, scout for 20 years before they're allowed to talk. Chris Mara's been out on the road for 15 years. These guys that, look, and I like analytics. They, exactly where they belong is in a little office down the hall and only talked to when spoken to, period. This is another example of why Cleveland is a total failure.
But you also can't, and I'm not just talking about analytics guys. I'm talking about a guy who comes into an organization as an intern. He interns in a couple different places. They make him an assistant scouting director. In the next 5 years, he does that. He's in the office. He's never out in the field. Then he becomes the director of player personnel. Then he becomes this guy. And those are the guys that are coming up for jobs. And there's a lot
of
They're
coming up for jobs at bad teams.
Yeah, but there's a lot of really good personnel guys that have paved the way and gone out on the road. And they know how to talk to, you know, people in the building and find out if this guy's a turd and that guy's a turd and who's not and who is and who's a good guy.
Well, what are you saying in context to the Cleveland situation? Are you saying Sashi Brown's one of those guys?
Sashi Brown, no, he's not one of those guys.
Okay, so that's what we're saying. Yeah. That's why.
But has to hire a guy who is like that. That's what I'm saying.
But what Pat's saying is obviously Sashi, he still has to report to Sashi Brown, a 38-year-old guy who is going to come at him from an analytical standpoint, not one of understanding personnel, people, or anything that he knows about football.
But is he going to report to him like a good GM reports to the owner?
I know enough about what goes on there now so I can fill you in on, forget all the what ifs. That guy has been already involved with contract issues, and he doesn't know a good player from a great player. But because he analyzes contracts around the league, he says, well, we can't pay him that. This is a joke. I've been in Cleveland. I've walked on that field with guys, and they're frustrated. They're frustrated by everything that goes on there. And if you don't think the best candidates are not getting someone to tell them what's going on in there, that's why they're not going to get a great candidate. They're not going to get a great GM, and they ain't going to get a great coach.
Here's the trickle-down effect. They're not going to get a good free agent.
Right.
You could pay them all the money in the world, but you know what players think? That they go there to die. That's what players joke about.
In a pile of money.
Sometimes, depending on how much that guarantee is, it's not worth it. All right, you prolong your career elsewhere.
Let's move on from Cleveland because we have a news story now, Pat. Tom Coughlin has informed his coaches that he's not going to be back as the Giants head coach. They're making a change. Right move?
Yeah. It's going to be McAdoo.
Is it the right move, though?
I know what's going on there, and I talked to enough guys. Philadelphia had some real interest in McAdoo, and the Giants do not want to upset. This is right to Brady. They don't want to upset the chemistry with Eli Manning and their $120 million quarterback. It'll be McAdoo. He was brought in there to be nurtured into the Giant way. The Giants don't really like bringing in people from the outside. And I'll take you back to the day that Ray Perkins left, and they hired a guy no one even knew, Bill Parcells. And everyone said, what are you doing? McAdoo will be the head coach there. I'd be shocked if he isn't.
Is he ready for it?
No. But was Parcells ready for it?
No.
Oh. This is right up that model.
You know what scares me about Ben McAdoo, and I think he's a pretty solid offensive mind with what he's done with the New York Giants, but here's his coaching career. Homer Center High School, assistant coach, 96-97. Indy Area High School, a PA, not even head coach there. Michigan State, he was a GA. Fairfield, O-line, tight ends. Pittsburgh, GA. New Orleans, he's offensive quality control. That's in 2004 now, he's entered the NFL. San Francisco.
11 years ago.
Quality control. With the Packers, he was a tight ends coach, QB coach. That went from 06 to 2013. 2014, the OC. He has never at any point in time in his coaching career been a head coach. For as young as he is, that scares me.
Me too. But the guy that I've been talking to about that situation says, mark my words, it'll be him. And my guy's not been wrong about the Giants or a couple other teams. But if you have $120 million locked up in your quarterback, and you brought this guy in a couple years ago, and you basically took play calling away from Tom. Tom oversaw Kevin Gilbride, and you said, back up, Tom. We're going to have this kid do it, and we're going to change the offense. And if you didn't see frustration in Coughlin's face in the last 2 years, then you weren't watching what was going on. They were nurturing this guy. So there are teams, and there are some shaky candidates on the list right now. But I got 12 former head coaches looking for work. 12. And once Pagano gets out here, it's going to be 13. In the world we live in, guys, I would never, and I don't think it's fair for me to say this, except that the circumstances provide me the opportunity to think this way. I can't afford to raise a guy who's never been a head coach. There's no turnaround time. You got to get the thing up and running in 2 years or you're going to get fired.
Well, Gase has never been a head coach.
Right. And he's going to have a hard time.
I think Adam Gase will be fine. I really do. I think a lot of it is who you are in personality. When you walk into a room, if Adam Gase is over there, and I don't know Ben McAdoo, but just by looking at him, he doesn't look like he's got a, you know, like Mark Trestman is on one side of the room and another guy's on the other side of the room. Todd Bowles is on the other side of the room. You're going to gravitate to Todd Bowles because he looks like a head coach and he acts like a head coach and he's a tough guy who played in the league. Mark Trestman looks like a bookworm who was an attorney or something, whichever he was.
Right. No, there's something to be said about body language, but I'll go back. I like Adam Gase a lot, but part of the answer is what team is he going to? You go to a place like Cleveland, you can be the most dynamic guy in the world. You're not going to make it. The structure is not very good. You go to another place where you got a young quarterback and now the GM is going to be someone you're going to be with that sees it your way. Fine. But Tennessee, you got a quarterback. Miami, forget that place right now. And you're not going to have much say. Philadelphia.
Yeah, but you guys keep saying there's no okay, let's forget the structure in Cleveland. If Cleveland was the job as it is right now and Andrew Luck was the quarterback that's there, is that a good job?
Yeah, well, there are five criteria that these coaches should look at. The smart ones will. Who's the owner? One. Who's the quarterback? Two. How much cap space do you have? Three. What's the power structure? Four. What's your draft pick situation? You get past those five with all yeses, then that's a good job. You get 4 out of 5, it's still a good job. You get 3 out of 5, don't take it. If you're desperate to be a head coach, you go be one. Look at all these guys are getting fired. Then, like guys like Pettine, they're never going to be head coaches again. Tom Sula, never again.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Pat, because I look at the Cleveland situation, and it's interesting you bring that up, Pete, because I had this discussion before with some guys out of Fox, and I said, I don't know. I think Andrew Luck's a great player. I don't know that he single-handedly could turn around that franchise. I think he's good enough to. The problem is he just would have to have more stability, more continuity around him because he's actually in a better situation now in Indianapolis, but he still needs some pieces, right? This is the NFL. It's not like you can all of a sudden do it single-handedly by yourself. Aaron Rodgers is arguably the best quarterback in the NFL the way he can play on a week-to-week basis, but he needs help. He's going to struggle without a Jordy Nelson. We've seen that this year. He doesn't have much of a run game, doesn't have much protection or a defense that can help him out. All of a sudden, he becomes more vulnerable. So even if Andrew Luck is in Cleveland, he's not turning it around so they can get an owner who understands that he doesn't know how to actually run a team. He needs to hire the best mind he can to do so. He needs to let that genius that he hires to be the best mind. Hire the best coach he can and let those guys figure it out for at least 4 years before you all of a sudden turn it over again and let things build with Andrew Luck and around him.
One thing I wanted to ask you. Okay. So let's put this scenario out there. I'm going to ask you the question. You guys can both play that. You're coach candidates, head coaching candidates. The job is Cleveland with Andrew Luck, Indianapolis with the Cleveland quarterback situation. Which job do you want, Brady Quinn?
Oh man. Because I think Irsay is the reason why, you know, some coaches may be scared off by that.
Right.
Why not?
I pinned you in a corner.
Well, let me ask you this, Pat. Hold on. Let me ask Pat a question. When you talk about those five things you evaluate, do you put ownership as number one? Is that the most important thing to you?
Yes.
So if that's the case, then I wouldn't take either. I'd stay and be a coordinator.
All right. Pat,
even with Andrew Luck being in Cleveland.
I would not take either job. They didn't pass the owner test, either one. Look at their recent history in both places. Is there any reason to trust the owners? No. Quarterback situation, luck gives you a quarterback. So there's one criteria. Cap space, they'll be okay, but they got a lot to do. Power structure, Ryan Grigson, have you heard the stories about what he's done to?
He'll be out.
He'll be out?
Yeah.
He'll be out. He won't be out if he's leading the search and he arrives at a coordinator like Sean McDermott, Gase, Matt Patricia, one of those guys. He won't be out. So you got, if that guy's leading the search in the room, I've talked to owners directly and off the record about guys, and they'll say to me, well, do you think the guy would come here? And I would say, well, he doesn't really like the front office. And the answer I'll get is, well, he can get rid of the front office. I could care less. Or, those guys are cast in stone. I've had both things said to me. If you can't get those guys out of there, then those are two bad jobs I would pass. But young guys think it's the only chance I'm going to get. So they jump at them and they're back to coordinators in 3 years.
And here's what they should do, Pat. They should look at a guy like Bruce Arians.
Yes.
And they should say he was patient. Now he kind of got thrusted into the position, but it worked out. But he was patient then to take the next step when he did get his opportunity. And he really thrived.
If Chuck Pagano doesn't get sick, does Bruce Arians ever get a coaching job?
Most likely.
He was 60 something.
Someone would take a chance.
I don't think he would have.
Okay, hold on. Does Tom Coughlin get another opportunity then?
Right now?
Yeah.
You think somebody's going to hire a 69-year-old Tom Coughlin?
I'm asking the question.
I don't think so.
Okay. I think there might be some teams that would debate it. Hiring for the next 4 years, he's in good health. He's won two Super Bowls. Hiring for the next 4 years and you have someone who you know you can elevate from underneath and give an opportunity, kind of groom in those 4 years.
Bring him back to Jacksonville.
There are guys telling me that he might be a candidate to be the GM in Jacksonville. I will say this. Pete Carroll's in his 60s. Bruce is in his 60s. Belichick's in his 60s. So it's not like there's a young guy's, it's just a young guy's game, but you got to be the right guy. But Holmgren, Shanahan, and then these guys all trying to get their resume under the door of the owner. McDaniels, Marone, Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley, Mike Smith, Munchak, Chip Kelly, Pat Shurmur, Tom Cable. I talked to two guys this weekend. One of them was heading up a list for his owner said, get me a list. And I said, who's on your list? And I said, you don't have to give them to me in order. But on his list were the following guys. Doug Marone, Hugh Jackson was on his list. Mike Smith. These are four interviews. Mike Smith, 3. Tom Cable, 4. None of the coordinators. And get this name. Carolina, Steve Wilkes, the kid who's the assistant head coach, DB coach. And people say, well, he's not even a coordinator. He said, Andy Reid wasn't a coordinator either. So that name popped right up along with David Shaw. Those were the names that popped up on his list. And he's been working on this thing for a month, getting ready for the owner.
So Mike Smith might actually get an interview.
He might.
I hope so.
You know, so it's just interesting because sometimes, first off, Brady, you've been with multiple coaches. Every time they fire a coach, and Pete, you and I have watched this for 100 years. Every time they fire a coach, they typically hire the opposite guy the next time. You get a grumpy old guy who you're firing, you're going to get the people's choice the next time. You're getting an offensive guy this time, it's a defensive guy. Right. It's always the opposite. Like, that's the reason we need to change.
I'll give you a guy told me this. And I don't know if you guys agree with this. He told me, he said, a name that he thinks would be intriguing as an NFL head coach, Mike Vrabel.
I think Mike's on the fast track to get one. I don't think he'll be on the list this year. Someone might interview him just so they get the feel for him. I worked for 4 head coaches in 5 years, and I was involved in the interview process twice. But I know what it does to the roster and everything else. But there were guys brought in mainly because the agent said, you really should talk to the kid. And the answer would be, we're not hiring him, but okay, send him in. And then all of a sudden you go, keep that guy's name on a radar list. That guy's 2-3 years away from being the right guy. And I think Vrabel's right on it, Pete.
Yeah, I think this is a situation because you look at him and the way he coaches and the way he handles himself and stuff. But even though he's never been a coordinator, he's been a position coach. A lot of times being a head coach, and you guys know this, a lot of it is delegating the power to the guys that actually coach the positions and stuff and trusting them enough. I mean, Mike Tomlin was never a head coach before he became the head coach of the Steelers.
He was only a coordinator for 1 year.
Right. I mean, it's not, in the end, there's a lot of people relationships, as you know, and Pat, you've been in the building and you play quarterback, Brady. You know, it's a lot of people relationships, A, and B, it's just football. It's not like you're opening up somebody's brain and doing brain surgery. If you've been a good football mind and you can handle the people and organization and your coordinators.
But Pete, here's the difference between brain surgery, which is incredibly complicated and difficult, right? But you've got one brain surgeon, you got one body you're operating on, and you got a few people in the room to help you out, right? All these incredible instruments and robots and crap, right? A football team, man, you got a 53-man roster. You got all these other people you got to deal with. And that's what's different about it is you've got to kind of, when you're the head coach or when you're the quarterback, when they say you're the face of the franchise, you legitimately are. So your responsibilities then change. All those people in the building, you got to know. You have to know their first name. You have to know, you know, when their birthday is and their kids and all that. Like that's your responsibility because you might not be titled CEO, but you're the person who's paid like it and you're the person who's responsible for all that when you're walking around the facility. And that's what they expect of you. But back to kind of what you're saying, in regards to either, assistants who haven't had, head coaching experience before or even assistants who have not even been a coordinator. I think when you look at a guy like Vrabel, you look at a guy like even Adam Gase, now he's been a coordinator, but he hasn't been a head coach before. They're real. They talk to you in a way that one, they respect you as a grown man. And as a player, you are coddled out of college. You are coddled in the NFL. I was a 29-year-old man having a guy come check my room the night before the game. Do you think that's necessary? 7 years into the NFL, do you think it was necessary that someone needed to come up and check my room and make, like, was football not enough to me? Like, I would really possibly, like, go out or do something stupid? Like that to me, like, there's all this kind of baby. And I'm just using that as an example of these guys speak to you like an adult and they handle it like an adult because they put trust. They delegate, like you guys are talking about, but they also put their trust into the players, into the coaching staffs to do their job.
Well, I'm going to bring that up. And Tom Coughlin is a Hall of Fame coach, correct? He'll be in camp.
Yeah.
When Tom Coughlin was in Jacksonville, I'll tell you a story. He had this rule book that was about the size of the phone book. And before every camp, he would have a slideshow and talk about his rule book. And this is the rules. This is the rules. And you'll appreciate this, Pat. Jeff Lagerman had one of the rules was you had to wear a tie on the road. Well, Jeff Lagerman wore a bolo tie. And this is actually a story that's going to be in my thing that I'm doing up. He wore a bolo tie on the road. And Coughlin saw him. He said, "That's not a tie." And Jeff was the player's rep. And he said, "Yes, it is. It's a bolo tie. And my uncle wore it and everything. This is a bolo tie." So the next year in the rule book, you know what it said?
No bolo ties.
No, it said cloth tie. And those are the kind of rules, and you talk about treating guys like little children. Those are the rules that these guys sometimes overstep their boundaries, and then they have to back away and realize, look, I'm pushing too hard. I think Coughlin realized that. I think Chip Kelly will ultimately realize that. And Pat, you've been around coaches that you know, great coaches that probably ultimately did that.
They all grow.
Pete, isn't Pete a perfect example?
Pete's the example from the other side. Pete was a guy with no rules that had to develop those and had to get tough, and he had to make tough decisions. He liked people so much, he'd always give him another chance. He's not that guy anymore. He doesn't give anyone another chance, but he got burned enough and fired twice in the NFL that he figured it out. Some of the other guys, like Belichick, who I was with, Belichick, he was blunt with me. He said, I gotta be out in front of the people and around the people more. Not that he's ever going to be the class comedian, but he recognized in Cleveland he didn't do anything to help himself as a person in the community. So, they all have to see what they're not and then go fix it. That's why some of these guys intrigue me, that have been head coaches, that are getting a second chance or should get a second chance. There's a lot of people cynically say never give a guy another chance, but I think you're missing the opportunity to get a guy that's self-corrected a lot of things. We all do a better job the second time if we're conscientious. Let me go back to Brady's point about bed check. It's such an interesting comment, Brady. Back when I was first at the Jets, 1989 and 90, I had bed check. We had to rotate it, so I get it. The truth of the matter was, the way I did it, It was, and you might appreciate this, you might laugh. I just knew who not to knock on the door. I didn't have to knock on Brady Quinn's door. But the reason we had it was because there were six idiots on our team that the second you closed your eyes or blinked, they were going out that door or down the hall their girlfriend was. There were some funny examples of that. So in order to not offend them personally, everyone got bed checked. But I'd go by your door and tap on it with one finger and say, I checked on Brady. He's fine. Then I'd be at the other door with the security guard opening it to see if he was in there.
See, that's interesting to me because I always felt like as a player, you know, ultimately everyone's out there for money. So you make that fine heavy enough for missing bed check or something else. And I know that's a collectively bargained thing, but if you make it heavy enough, or you're trying to make some sort of stipulation to it, that'll deter people's actions when you start taking away money. I mean, that's been proven, throughout the course of it all, but let me transition really quick. I got a couple questions I'm going to throw at you guys. I want to go through each job. Now that we know the New York Giants job is open and see which one you guys feel like, kind of rank them. All right. Well, we have five jobs open right now.
Yeah.
Are you going to count? You count Miami and Tennessee?
Miami, Tennessee.
I got six.
Six.
So Miami, Tennessee, Indy, Giants, Philly, and Cleveland.
All right. Giants one.
Okay.
One for me as well.
You, Brady, one?
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay. Two for me would be Indy because of the quarterback. It's not open yet. It's not open. It's not technically open yet.
Okay, so we won't include that then because I don't want to, you know, I feel like that's rude.
All right. It's rude, but it's probably
true. Okay, it's not open though, so they're off list five teams.
Okay. So one would be, I'd probably put Miami second.
Yeah, I would not.
Where would you put second?
Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee second. I'm sorry. Tennessee would be second. Yeah, because of Mariota.
I feel like I could do Pat's for him. Yeah. I feel like I know Pat that well.
Yeah, well, no, but I'm with you, though. Tennessee. Three would be Miami for me.
Yeah.
Because no state income tax.
No. That's a good reason when you're in – believe me when I tell you, the no state income tax, just as a side note, when you're at a 53-man roster with a salary cap, you basically get three extra quality players because of that.
Yeah, think about that.
And I studied forever. I got a bunch of guys to sign a proposal to the league that we have some kind of offset against it. And they said, forget it. But you think about having $150 million of salaries and there's no state income tax. You're able to recruit at least three guys for $3 million apiece on your roster that the other guys can't afford because their cap goes out before that. Let's go with the owners, though. Tennessee, I like them, and I got them, too, but there's a volatility at the ownership there. You get a new owner next year, and where there's smoke, there's fire. Then all of a sudden, that's a very unstable place. That's what happened at our place when our owner died, and we ended up putting it up for sale and finding Woody Johnson. I like Jed York in San Francisco. I like him a lot. I think he wants to win. He listens to his uncle, which is a good thing for him to do. Philadelphia, Jeff Lurie, I had great respect for him until this thing happened, because he really got quiet after owning the team for 2 years and being subjected to the public criticism. He went in the background and let Andy Reid and Banner run it. Made a mistake with Andy, letting him go, made a mistake with Joe Banner and listened to Howie and then never fired Howie. Now Howie's going to be back in power. So Philly became volatile when it was stable for a long time. The owner in Miami, you know, the guy's non-existent. He's not going to be around. You're going to have to deal with Mike Tannenbaum. I like Mike. Mike replaced me. We're friends. But Mike's going to be heavily involved in everything on that football team.
And I'll say this. That's too bad. You won't say it. I will. That's too bad.
Well,
yeah. How'd you rank him, Pat? You had one.
Pat's got Giants one. I think Tennessee two.
Tennessee, too, with that little asterisk there. And then
the volatility. Philly and San Fran?
I might say San Francisco.
Okay. And then Miami, Cleveland are even.
I can deal with Jed. I mean, if I was a coach, Jed York, you can approach and talk to. He's a good guy. He's young, and he wants to do it right. And there's a history there. This is the other thing I learned from Pete Carroll. Try to go to places. That's why he went to SC. He said San Francisco has a history of winning. You have guys around there like Ronnie Lott and Montana that want to be visible. It's kind of like going to Notre Dame, Brady. There's a history there. There are other schools that probably after you that said all kinds of great things, but there was no history at the place. San Francisco has a great history.
No quarterback. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if Chip Kelly was there, maybe you could make a case for that, him being better in that system. But okay, real quick segue though.
Cause you didn't rank him.
I would say mine would be very similar to Pat's.
See, mine would be, what did I say? I said one Giants.
Everyone agrees Giants is the best job.
Two Titans. Three, I'd go Miami because there's no state income tax and because they have better quarterback than the other guys. Cleveland's the bottom
one. Get out of that contract.
Cleveland's
though.
Last. Philly would be four and then San Francisco would be five probably.
Yeah, just from doing the game, by the way, a couple weeks ago with the 49ers, I really feel like I agree with Pat. Like Jed York seems like he really wants and is devoted to whatever's in the best interest of that team winning moving forward. I just wonder if Trent Baalke is the right guy to be involved.
Should he keep Trent Baalke? That was my question.
That's what really concerns me. I mean, just watching him, like, you know, Pat, you talk about, you know, guys, Bill Belichick, for example, Cleveland, not being around people enough and all that and being seen. Trent Baalke seems like that standoffish figure at times. And players don't say that. Players say that he actually comes out and coaches and talks about the technique and stuff, but he seems standoffish a little bit to me.
Well, I know him pretty well, and I'll say this. I have great respect for Jim Harbaugh, but Jim never liked when I was around their place, and I had to be there every summer because he knew Pete and I were friends, and he always knew on my camp tour I was going to Seattle after San Francisco. He never even wanted me to watch practice because he thought I'd go up and tell Pete. But Trent would go, oh, that's ridiculous. Come on the field with me, you know. So I like Trent. I think Trent works really hard at the personnel end of it. There was inevitably going to be a battle between him and Jim. I think they should, if I was Jed, I will say this to him. He should have put the two of those guys in a room and said, work it out because the both of you together make a great team. And they didn't work it out, but I think Trent's credentials as a personnel guy, look at some of the talent those guys drafted.
Yep.
And the owner is great. So that's why I put San Francisco right up there. And actually, San Francisco might move to two, only because of the ownership issue in Tennessee.
So my last question, because of you mentioning Notre Dame, Pat, and Pete, this is to both you guys. Which college coach, if there is one, could you possibly see getting a head coaching job in the NFL? Because I personally feel like when you mention Notre Dame, if Brian Kelly was ever to leave Notre Dame, I think it would only be for the New York Giants job. Because that is such a coveted position, and because of the ownership in the organization, and they have a quarterback in Eli Manning. So I kind of look at that as like, that might be the only place he would ever leave, the culture and the, you know, the tradition that he's kind of built on his own, you know, the past few years since he's been at Notre Dame.
I'd go get Nick Saban. That would be me. I would go, Nick Saban failed in the NFL because he didn't have a quarterback. They made the wrong decision. They went with Dante Culpepper over Drew Brees. If I'm the Indianapolis Colts, I boot whoever's in the organization and I go get Nick Saban. That's what I would do. Pay him whatever he wants.
The only college coach I would not go after, Brian, with all due respect to Brian, I really believe that, well, hey, I think he's been trying to get an NFL job for a while, but no. I think Chip Kelly set the college guys back. The only guy I would go after is Jim Harbaugh, and he won't leave Michigan after 1 year, although he should, and he should go to the Indianapolis Colts. Whatever he wants is what I'd give him to come to the Colts.
All right, let's switch gears, and we'll do the playoffs. And we'll go through them quickly. We'll make our picks and why. We'll start with the NFC. We'll go Washington playing host to Green Bay. I like the Packers. I think Aaron Rodgers will show up in this game somehow, some way. They'll play faster. They'll be more aggressive. Washington first playoff game. I think Rodgers will be the difference in this game.
The scary thing for me is it's the Packers on the road. I thought the same thing last week when they played the Minnesota Vikings. I had actually had a bet with my radio host that I lost. Now we're tied for the frickin' season now. Cause I was betting purely on Aaron Rodgers, and I learned my lesson because even as great as he is, he can't do it all. He can't get open. He can't, you know, be the guy that buys more time because the pass protection is so bad and they can't run the football. So, I'm actually taking the Washington Redskins right now. I think they've built enough momentum, really playing good complementary football. I think they're going to win a close game at home. Pat?
I think this is the hardest of the four games to pick. I could go back and forth. Right now I'm taking on the mistake that Brady claimed he made before about Rodgers. I'll take him on the road with all of his experience, but I am scared about it. Why? He's 2-4 in his last six playoff games. He's got a losing postseason record on the road, and Kirk Cousins is impressive to me. And you're right. The supporting cast, And it really, for me, comes down to the defense. If Green, two things. Our friend Rodgers got to run more because he has to, period. And I don't like to see it, but they're not going to win this game if he doesn't. And the defense has to go get Kirk Cousins. If they can't disrupt him with pressure, then the Redskins will win, and I'll be wrong.
The other NFC game, the Minnesota Vikings hosting the Seattle Seahawks. Pat, I'll start with you. I have an idea where you're going with this one, but who are you picking?
I think everyone will be following me eventually, but I got Seattle. They won't win 38-7 like they did when they ran them over a few weeks ago. But here's what Seattle's got. They got a guy named Russell Wilson who's got a bunch of receivers that never dropped the ball, a quarterback that's won from the pocket, a quarterback that can always get you three or four first downs with his feet, maybe even a touchdown. Marshawn Lynch is back, and the defense will neutralize Adrian Peterson to the point where it's a Bridgewater passing attack. And the last time they played, he completed a total of six passes to wide receivers and no touchdowns, and that's what I think will happen again.
Pat, I'm right there with you. I think this is all Seattle. I think they're the team that scares me the most entering the playoffs, really on both sides, whether that's the AFC or NFC. And they just look like they're back to their old selves. I mean, they held the Arizona Cardinals, I think, what, 30-some rushing yards last week. I mean, this was an offensive juggernaut we thought coming into the game. They went into Arizona, just pounded them down in what seemed to be a meaningful game for the Cardinals. They wouldn't have started Carson Palmer if it wasn't meaningful.
Yeah, but there was the motivation.
No, they got
like
down so
it
fast.
It looked like them and New England decided they weren't going to play this week.
Same thing. They got down so fast. They're like, we're not going to subject Carson Palmer and Tom Brady to this abuse. So anyways, I like Seattle. I just like the matchups.
I like Seattle too. I'm with you guys. I think Seattle will go in there and win the game. It's going to be a tough game. The last time they went there, no Harrison Smith. He went out in the game. No Anthony Barr. That was a big,
no Sendejo.
Big part of their, their safeties were terrible. They got beat in the middle of the field on a bad play. Look, they will be much more competitive, but in the end, I think Seattle will be the team to advance. Let's shift to the AFC. Bengals Steelers. No, it doesn't look like it's going to be Andy Dalton. Looks like AJ McCarron. I still think the Bengals are good enough to win the football game. I think they're good enough defensively. I think they'll make enough plays offensively. And when you look at that Pittsburgh defense, they have real problems in the secondary.
To me, I just don't feel like Ben Roethlisberger has let anyone down. I mean, they needed to get a win last week. They made it happen. Obviously, they got some help from the Jets to actually get into the playoffs. But at this point, you know, I think they're going to be a tough matchup for anyone they face because of their offensive firepower. My concern, and Pete, I know you're right there with me, is the secondary. And it's the cornerbacks. It's not the safeties. It's the cornerbacks, the coverage outside. And I worry how they'll be able to match up versus AJ Green. But everyone wants to talk about the inconsistencies of Andy Dalton, if indeed he was to play in the playoffs. The problem is AJ Green's just been just as much inconsistent.
All right. Go ahead, Pat, real quick. Make your pick. And then we got to get out of here because
Pittsburgh. I like Ben Roethlisberger throwing the ball 45 times against these guys. McCarron has no experience in the postseason. That'll show up during the game, and they will apply enough pressure. Remember, they're the number six run defense, Pittsburgh, and they're number 10 in sacks. They'll get after them, and just miserable enough.
And before we get out of here, the last game, I like Houston. Pat, go quick. Who do you like?
I like Kansas City on the road, 21-20. Alex Smith, a couple playoff games under his belt. Brian Hoyer's never been in one. That's why.
And you? I'm the same way, and Andy Reid as well, some playoff experience.
There's our abbreviated version of Rough of the Passer podcast on Black Monday. All right, Pat, thanks.